Good morning and welcome to our meeting at 9 a.m. on September 17th, 2024. Time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today are Commissioner Tony Olson, our Vice President, Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, our Secretary, John Harlow, our CEO, Colin Willenbrock, our General Counsel, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stolson, our Deputy Clerk of the Board. Please mute or turn off your cell phone or electronic devices at this time. This session is for the board and general manager to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. Our first item is our CEO general manager briefing and study session. Good morning, John.
Good morning, commissioners. We have lots of important and good stuff to go through today, so we'll get right at it. First up is the 2025 poll attachment rate adjustments in Felician. Good morning.
All right, my name is Felician Ang. I'm an economist in the Rates Department, and I'm here today to speak to you on 2025 poll rates. All right, so start with the purpose of this presentation is to share the updated poll attachment rates. And if all this is approved, these will go into effect on January 1st of 2025. A couple of follow-up meetings, we'll have a public hearing on October 7th, followed by a vote on October 22nd. To start, a little bit of background on poll attachments. Currently, the district has about 87,000 poll attachments. 28,000 of which are on district polls, and the remaining 9,000 or so are on joint polls. In total, we are looking at about $2 million revenue from poll attachments each year. And just as a reminder, last year we did approve a 5% rate increase, which amounted to a $1.54 increase for attachment on district polls and an 85 cents increase for those on joint polls. Next, I just wanted to quickly review methodology and assumptions that we use in our calculation. You may remember these slides from last year when we went over them, so this might just be a quick refresher for you. For our methodology, we do follow the Washington State Code, which was put in place back in 2008. The rate is made up of two parts. The first half is the FCC telecom method that is known to benefit the attachers more because the formula only considers the usable space of the pole. So that would be the blue sections on the diagram of that on the right here. Okay, the second half of that is the APP shared cost method. And the largest difference here is the treatment of the common space. So the common space is basically the unusable space of the pole, and that would be the red section on the diagram. So that in that method, it says that the cost of that space should be equally allocated to all attachers rather than just the utility bearing the cost. There are a couple of assumptions that we make at Snohomish that differs from the standards. The first one being the space occupied by the attachment. So a standard assumption is to use one linear per attachment. We at the district have a prior agreement with our attachers from a long time ago to use only half a linear foot to allow for more attachments. And that has helped reduce the attachment rates. The next one is pole size. The standard FCC and APP assumption is to use 37.5 feet. We use 45 feet because it is a better representation of what we have out in the field. And that again reduces the attachment rate.
Do we have any attachments on poles taller than 45? That would be under this particular program. Okay, I'm getting
it. Okay. Yeah, it could be. The 5 to 5 feet is really like the average of kind of what we
think. Right. Right. I have a question.
Yes.
So, can you imagine any unforeseen consequences of not including the safety code space?
So for the last one, the safety space. So for the safety space, we don't use it in our calculations, but in practice, it's not being used on the pole. So
it is a safety space.
It is a safety space. Okay. But just so the last one, yes, we do not consider it within our calculation of the rate.
Okay.
Just so we also have an agreement with our customers from the past, and that helps reduce the attachment rate as well.
Okay.
Commissioner, are you asking, is it unsafe to exceed the standard?
If there were any possible negative consequences from that, but I guess not.
Yes, sure. The last one, the safety space, is what we use in the calculation. We just don't count it as unusable space.
Well, we put such an emphasis on safety. I was a little surprised that we don't factor that in, but it's we just don't factor for the rates. So the same question would go for using 45 feet instead of 37 and a half. That reduces the rate, but again, it's no problem.
Yeah, because our poles that looks what look they look like on the field are on average closer to 45.
Okay. So the standard FCC and APP assume 37 and a half because just nationwide.
Yeah, that's more of a common average size pole for general mass of utilities.
Okay.
We just have a tendency to, on average, use taller poles in our service area. Are moving to taller poles to the 45 foot being the average.
Sure.
So if we have a 40 foot pole, 35 foot pole, we will typically replace that with a 45 foot pole.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
All right. So here's a look at what the new rates will look like. So similar to last year, we are proposing a 5% rate increase. So for attachments on district poles, they'll go from $3.93 to $2.58. And for those on joint poles, they will go from $17 to $17.92. So the increase is mainly attributed to our cost of poles, which we've seen go up by approximately 6% over the last year. And also there's been a rise on A&G expenses over the last 2 years. So in total, we are expecting annual revenue to increase by $123,000. And just as we do every year, we notified our customers of this potential rate increase back in July, and we haven't heard of any concerns so far.
I have a question about the generally owned poles. So if we charge $17 and a penny for an attachment, what is the other owner of the pole charge? Do we know that? Do they fall in a different methodology?
I don't know. I wonder. We have Mo as my lifeline.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mo Matthews, manager, joint use and permits. They follow the FCC rate. And so, but they don't normally disclose what they're charging to us. So they're somewhat.
Okay.
Okay. So here's a look at how we compare to our neighboring utilities. One thing to note on this chart is that not all utilities review their rates on a regular basis. So some of their rates are going to be a little bit older than ours. One that I'd usually like to compare ourselves to is Seattle City Light. They do update their rates every year. They also have comparable rates. They have rates for attachment on joint poles as well as those on utility. And as you can see on this chart, we fall just right below them on both of those instances.
Questions, Commissioners?
Right. So next one is on application fees. Currently, whenever a customer wants to attach to our pools, they have to submit an application, which we charge $185 for it, plus there's a $12 per pool fee. However, these fees are pretty outdated. They haven't been reviewed since 2011. So we just performed a review of our cost and found that there is a shortfall of approximately 64%. So in order to fully recover these costs, we would have to increase the application fee to $494 and plus a $32 per pole. However, we are proposing that we phase that in over 2 year periods just to ease in the transition as well as to allow us to have an extra year of data to review as well. So we're proposing that we start in the first year with an application fee of $340 and a fee of $22 per pole.
Commissioner, I did have a question on this. What was the consideration given to this application fee not being reviewed the last time the usage rates were reviewed? This is 2011, they haven't been looked at. So therefore the increases are pretty substantial.
So take responsibility for not reviewing those more often.
I'm not reading.
That's okay. But I will say we recently, within the last 2 years, had an engineer under joint use specifically. So over the last 2 years, I wanted to specifically see what those costs would be for. So I've been aware of it a while, but I held off until I could get more accurate.
Thank you. I have a question to follow up.
Yes.
So haven't there been a lot more requests for applications in the last couple or 3 years? Seems like there are so many telecommunications companies now, many more than there were a few years ago.
So we see it ebb and flow. The last several years, it has been busy, but it's been basically Comcast and Wave, and it says overlash attachments. We haven't had a new attacher for a couple of years. That's MCI Metro. And they're still building out their plant. So it's not as busy as it was 3 years ago. And it's gone down a little bit. But, you know, we're still very busy getting apps. They just aren't quite what it's been the last 2 years.
Anyway, it's long overdue. And here we are.
Long overdue. Yes.
It's time for it. Okay.
Right, I just have this last slide for next steps. We'll come back for a public hearing on October 7th and then a public hearing and action on October 22nd. And if all goes to plan, these rates will become effective on January 1st of
2025.
Questions?
No, I have
no
further questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Felicia and Mo. Excellent job. Next up is Journey to Inclusive Excellence. And Cheryl Morgan. Good morning, Cheryl.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, commissioners. Let me. Okay. All right. So, good morning. In this presentation, I'll walk you through a journey towards an inclusive environment. I'll explain where we've been, what actions we've taken, and share with you where we're headed. We continue to identify significant opportunities to build on and have laid a strong foundation for creating a welcoming workplace. Our focus now is the future steps to ensure that every employee feels welcomed and valued. This started in the summer of 2020, and with the ELTs seriously thinking about how they would create an environment that supported psychological safety for all employees. They were interested in an approach that honored everyone's collaboration. I came on board soon thereafter and led the organization through a listening tour, as I call it, but really it's an organizational assessment to highlight opportunities to create a better workplace. Our organization-wide listening tour revealed we needed to focus on ensuring that all employees feel welcome, supported, appreciated within the organization, especially women. It also identified key opportunities for improvement in leadership consistency and strengthening efforts to foster accountability. These findings have guided our approach in creating long-term solutions. To ensure that employees were involved in shaping the inclusive culture we aim to build, we formed an inclusion committee. This is our inaugural committee. This committee was integral in gathering, assessing organizational needs, and developing recommendations that reflect the experiences and insights of our workforce. Employee involvement ensured that the roadmap we created would address the real opportunities for improvement within the organization. This committee also spent time building trust, which was super important, and creating space to have dialogue about opportunities. Out of this came 14 engagement norms and, of course, our blueprint. This blueprint was developed by the Inclusion Committee after a year of focused effort. It provided a set of comprehensive recommendations of addressing the key findings from the listening tour. The blueprint is designed to serve as a roadmap for leadership to create a more welcoming, supportive environment. Following its creation to include the 14 engagement norms, we in transition to inclusion 2.0. This group, which is focused on supporting the blueprint implementation and establishing the necessary infrastructure for long-term success. So, inclusion 2.0. This committee, after a year of organizing and creating the blueprint, we launched to continue driving our inclusivity efforts forward. This new phase focused on two key objectives: supporting the implementation and establishing the long-term infrastructure. We just welcomed our third inclusion committee, now coined the Inclusion Committee 3.0, and we still have members on this team that started since the beginning. We had our orientation yesterday, and we're excited to move forward with integrating our values within our systems, our practices, and our policy, and digging deeper into being ambassadors for these values and supporting teams. Looking forward, I will continue to provide advisement to the ELT, conducting listening tours, supporting teams on projects, providing coaching, and create curricula, all in partnership with the ELT, the Inclusion Committee, and HR. We will strengthen HR's role in leading efforts to foster a more inclusive environment. HR has always been a pivotal partner in ensuring that the blueprint vision is successfully implemented. We provide managers with training, tools, and resources needed to create this welcoming environment. And we aim to build strong accountability structures and consider continuous improvement. This work already evident in our strategic plan through several key initiatives. One of the biggest opportunities that we've had is creating a monthly space where each team talks about ways that they can be more inclusive. It started with our engagement norms. We have 14 of those. And now we've moved to other learning opportunities, which are on the job scenarios where team members can do better, talk about those things, and promote psychological safety. Lastly, our learning opportunities, we continue to focus on expanding these development opportunities for all employees. Customized training and engagement norms invite employees to consistently have conversations, while learning opportunities provide those job scenarios to inform day-to-day practices to support employees in getting what they need as individuals and to foster a more inclusive environment for all in the work environment. These ongoing efforts will ensure that everyone understands the importance of psychological safety and creating a culture where all employees can thrive. And now, as we build to a future with strategic priorities strengthening HR, we are committed to inclusion that will guide our direction. Now I'm open for any questions.
Questions, sure.
Thank you. What can you say more about your accountability structures?
Yeah, so one thing
what do they look like? How do you do them?
So one, it's just a feedback loop in real time. We have integrated at every level from managers to the ELT metrics that we're currently creating. Also within the strategic plan process, we're building metrics now so that they can be tied into performance as it relates to our behaviors.
Okay, so do you have any past accountability reports?
No, not at this time.
Okay, thank you. That's all for now.
Okay. I have no questions.
Yes, please.
You're off the hook. I do have a couple of comments, and I just wanted to note that I lastly did a new employee org. You were involved.
Yes.
And given my background, it was very evident the progress that has been made to this program, because almost to a new employee, when asked the question, first of all, why did you want to come to the PD? Well, great benefits. But when you got here, they used terms like acceptance, accepting, open, didn't find the clicks. And just a good place to work and a place I like to come. I mean, it was just that kind of response, which is really, I thought, over and above just, you know, that you just say, well, you pay well and you get benefits. It was, don't you think it was really evident?
Yeah, I mean, and it's not just me. It's the whole community that has wrapped around caring about each other.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of work at every level to really be passionate about what this workplace looks like so that we can serve our customers.
Well, you hear that from this boy. Some of them only maybe a couple months.
Yeah.
Some maybe 6, 7 months. That was very foreign to me some time back. Never heard that. But it really stuck out to me, and I was very proud of our workforce and all the work that it has done. Number two, I just wanted to convey to our public, our owners, that the board has placed special emphasis in its governance policies. In terms of the importance of this work. And I just wanted to convey that that it is kind of the overriding umbrella that it's, and then the strategies are developed under that. This board has for a long time been very supportive of this kind of work.
I do have one other comment.
Is Commissioner Olson, are you done?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So I do understand why the commission were excluded from the work, because it would have affected dynamics within groups. I get that. But I have felt all along that there should have been some training that's apart for us, featuring or focusing on the same values. I just have to share that. I think you know it. Early on, I said, well, shouldn't the commission be a part of this? I mean, feeling valued and welcomed is really, really important for commissioners too. And we don't get to interact with staff much, really. So that's just the only thing I would say that I feel would have been an improvement. Separately, we could have done a workshop or two just with the commission, just to focus on those values and the kinds of experiences that we as human beings, elected, yes, but you know, not really all that different from the staff and the customers. So that's just my feeling, it's a feeling.
So I'll take that on. That's my responsibility, certainly not Cheryl's. Or my accountability. And if we go back to the very beginning in my role to the organization is to figure out how to best serve our employees and how to create a culture, which I think this work, honestly, is the most important thing that I do and the most important thing that the ELT does. Creating a culture where every single employee feels welcomed and valued, appreciated, recognized, can contribute in positive ways, use their skills, their talents to contribute to the mission of the organization. That's my responsibility. That's my accountability. And that's why this work is so important. That's on me if we should have parlayed that to how do we help the board, you know, build those relationships and build that same sense. Lessons learned for me.
Okay. I understand.
Well, I had one question, maybe a challenging question, but so obviously, to improve culture and to continuously improve culture, the ELT has to completely embrace it, be believed by the staff. So can you talk a little bit about your work with ELT, and then how does the ELT get policed? Is it self-policing? Do the staff police them every day? Or how do you make sure you keep that working?
Yeah, so
policing's probably not a good word.
Yeah, I'm definitely not policing. What I would say is that my presence is on the ELT, which is a big deal. We have coaching meetings every month. Any of the policies that come forth, the ELT is diligently working to, one, know what the employees want so that they can be informed. I think in the strategic planning process, it's written in every way. And I think just my presence, as well as my engagement in one-on-ones, allows for there to be interaction. We just finished a DEI leadership training that is in pilot phase right now that the ELT went through. So they are knee deep in this effort and leading. We have conversations all the time. We make space for it and place for it. And then of course the investment is huge. And so, you know, staff have the open opportunity to engage with ELT in regards to that. They lead in the monthly conversations. And then specifically with the inclusion committee, we meet on a quarterly basis to really dive into some of the opportunities that we have to be better and do better in regards to the culture.
And if it's okay, I'd like to add to that, because Sherelle articulated all the things that she's involved in, and one of which is embedded in her comments is she is part of the ELT. She's at most of our meetings, and especially the strategic meetings or meetings where we're talking about, you know, how do we build the workforce of the future, and how do we make sure that we are through our electrification policy, doing the right things with our community. And Sherelle has that voice that is unique, that always brings a perspective of inclusion. And are we asking the right questions? Are we thinking about it for those that don't have equal opportunity? And how do we address those as an organization and certainly as an ELT? And that's one of the most profound learnings from me. Certainly, and I think for us as an organization, certainly the ELT, those conversations, it's, you know, I compare it to my mindset around safety. If we're in any discussion, that's one of those key focuses, the health and safety of our folks. And how does that play into even things that you wouldn't think are correlated or connected to safety? Terrell does that very, very well for us from an inclusion perspective, from a diversity perspective. She's asking those questions and making us think about how do we incorporate this into everything that we do.
And I think, like, as we move forward, what I'm now seeing in the transition when you talk about accountability is now ELT members are asking those questions. So all of the activities that I started to do, now we're seeing ELT members do it, inclusion committees do it, and that's our kind of forward focus now, that it's not just me doing that role, but now that we're learning and growing, they're also doing it too.
I have another comment.
Maybe both have followed.
Oh, go ahead. You first.
Oh, you go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. For me, this is a big one. I understand the division between staff and commission, but I think the commission should be on the ELT, should be represented on the ELT, because how would the head of the commission understand all this going on? Because she's the link. We have a female right now, so I could say she. So we're changing titles, we're changing a lot of things, and I don't think we should.
Commissioner, I think this is out of the scope of this conversation today.
But who are you talking
about? Well, we're talking about the leadership team.
No, but in terms of board representation.
Pardon?
In terms of board representation, who are you talking about?
Whoever is the head of the commission.
Oh, okay.
Just something to think about.
Commissioner Olson, you have a question?
A question is just another observation. It's observing. It seems to me that the maturity that we're seeing in our employee development programs, our employee training programs, are an outcrop of our DEI programs. That's the sense I'm getting, because I'm just amazed at what the training and development programs that we have here for employees. And so much of it is around culture.
Yep. Exactly.
So,
that's a great observation. I think it's one of those that we want that to be apparent. Again, I would go back and, you know, as we have, as one example, Rob Beiler and I have done a safety leadership training for all of the leaders, managers, senior managers, ELT, over the last, we've done like 8 sessions over the last 5 to 6 months. And that's was spun off of a safety leadership training that we do for our field folks and folks that are going to be foremen or leads that really focused on physical safety. With this effort, that has actually transitioned to, certainly it's about continuing to make sure that we're doing all the things necessary to make sure people go home safely from a physical sense, but it's the overall health, safety, and well-being, and that well-being is emotional health, mental health, emotional safety, psychological safety. And we talk a lot about, you know, are people feeling okay to speak up? Are we focused on how people are showing up at work? Not just from a physical sense, but from an emotional sense, a mental sense. Are they cut in? Do they feel like they have too much work? There's anxiety going on with too many responsibilities or too much work going on. Those are key things to making sure that our team, the entire team PUD, feels supported, feel that we are aware of the things that they're going through, and how do we make sure that we are serving them in the best way so they can come and be successful, they contribute to the organization in positive ways. So we've really kind of blended this. It is truly all about the overall health and well-being of our folks, and that includes all the different, you know, kind of inclusion aspects to that.
Another question. So we have a lot. We started this process before the pandemic. We did, didn't we?
No, right in the pandemic.
Right in the pandemic. So we have so many employees now that work from home. Does that bring challenges to this work when people aren't physically in the same place all the time or often? Or
so we have a variety of hybrid opportunities to be able to engage employees. We leave that up to the managers to kind of designate or engage with whatever the needs are. We just more provide the content and then help support them if they're having issues with folks who have experience that they want to be more engaged with this work in person versus not. But I would say overall, what we're hearing is great feedback in regards to the monthly conversations. People are using the terms, they're knowledgeable about the content. And so I haven't heard of any issues related or opportunities related to hybrid and this work particularly. We do try to have most of our trainings that deal with these opportunities in person as much as possible. There's just a different vibe to it, but we haven't heard of any issues related to that I'm aware of.
So I just want to say, thank you to John, who brought you to us. John Melissa brought you to us. And to kick off this work. I mean, I see the changes in my short time in utility. I see my changes in culture, just in presentations. I see staff coming to us that aren't just up on the leadership team, but at all levels. I see fresh ideas. I think that's all part of developing great culture. So I'm glad you're here. And I did wonder if commissioners, if there'd be any value to us at some point in the future about maybe us learning more deeply about the 14 engagement norms. Just as a learning for us.
When Commissioner Wolf brought that up, I'm thinking that perhaps as a half a day or whatever as a part of when we review our governance policies, that it could be a special session that we have, and not just one time, that it could be incorporated. And I thought your comments were well stated, and I immediately went to for me, that kind of likes when we're reviewing our
the legal restrictions on us require that we have executive sessions or something, some kind of special sessions to be able to talk about things that are on our minds or in our hearts. And so if we had that linkage with Cheryl, I think
I wonder if I would ask council, wouldn't this be open meeting?
Yeah, I think your suggestion that we have a retreat as we've done before that's focused on governance, but also commissioner education or training would be more than appropriate. That's how we've done
it. But it is open meeting.
It will be an open meeting, must be scheduled.
Okay. So, Mr. President, you might ask the clerk to make a notation on that in her.
Clerk is not
in her.
In the affirmative.
Yes.
Mr. Harley, you know.
I can't take any credit, zero credit on bringing Sherelle here. That was Kim Johnston and some of the previous ELT members that really give a lot of credit to getting Sherelle here. It has been, it was a great move.
Yeah. Sorry, Kim, thank you. All right.
Now we promised to give her a bad time.
Who
can't?
No.
Oh, I'm here for it.
We're here to talk about equity solution. We don't want to win our chest.
Oh, that's okay.
For the training?
Thank you very much.
I haven't had the training.
We're glad you're here. Yeah, that's going to be first norm.
Thank you, Sherelle. Excellent job. All right, next up is the easement from the Port of Everett for our Head Island Cable project and Mark Flurry. Morning, Mark.
Morning. Morning, commissioners.
Morning.
My name is Mark Fleury. I'm senior manager of T&D System Operations and Engineering. I'm also joined today by Jen Southard and Maureen Barnes from our real estate group. Jen's here in person. Maureen's out of town, so she's online. And also in the back row, Eric Schneider and Paul McMurray, who represented the business and legal on the negotiation of the agreement with. So the purpose of my presentation today is to inform the board of the proposed purchase of both a permanent and temporary construction easement from the Port of Everett, replacement of a submarine distribution cable, provide power to Hat Island. So this negotiation's been a few years in the making, but we're at the finish line. I'm outlining the primary terms of the transaction, then we'll bring this back for consideration of approval by resolution at the October 7th commission meeting. A little background on Hat Island, and I know on several occasions we've provided this to you already, but I wanted to make sure that this was fresh in your minds. So we've been providing service to Hat Island since 1974 via submarine power distribution cable. Historically, service has been provided by an existing cable that runs from the Tulalip substation across tribal lands and tide lands, with easement rights conveyed to us by the Tulalip tribe and the Bureau of Indian Affairs. After 50 years, the existing cable is nearing the end of its serviceable life. It's at risk of continued failure. As a reminder, we've spliced the cable once already. The new cable installation is proposed to avoid a potential emergency, which would isolate the residents of Hat Island from electrical services. Along the way, several new routes were studied for the new cable. With the optimum route, the decision was made to utilize the Port of Everett property. So here's a map or an aerial on the right that shows an overview of the alignment. And you can see the terminus in the bottom right corner there at the port property. And I'll zoom in and show a little bit more detail around that. But the project's gonna launch from the south end of the Port of Everett property and will extend approximately 32,000 feet of subsea cable to the Hat Island Marina, which is the current landing point for the existing cable on the Hat Island side. This route was chosen because it utilizes deep water, avoiding anchorage areas and also eelgrass sanctuaries. Each end of the new cable will be installed through a directional drill conduit, so it'll be buried at the near shore environment on both ends. Here's that kind of zoomed in view of the Port of Everett property. You can see in the lower right corner with the yellow box, that's an area that the port utilizes infrequently. They call it the boneyard. They use it to store materials that are infrequently used. And they've allowed us through this agreement to, in a few weeks, secure both a temporary construction easement to enter into the property, install the infrastructure that we need, and then a permanent easement for the permanent placement, a perpetual easement for the permanent placement of the infrastructure. The description of the two easements, the easements will consist of a 15-foot wide permanent easement that extends 778 feet across the Port of Everett's property. In addition, we're getting an 18-month temporary construction easement, and this is for the staging of our contractors and our own crews for making up terminations. The total area of the temporary construction easement is about 23,000 square feet in area, about half an acre. These for the subject easements, as determined by an appraisal, are $74,000 for the permanent easement and $91,300 for the temporary construction easement.
Question. Is that permanent? Is the price also permanent?
Yes.
It won't be increasing with amendments.
No, there's no annual fee or
issues. The price for...
I mean, I'm sure we need it no matter what, but...
There's no Paul McMurray, senior counsel. There's no subsequent annual easement fee, but there are some additional fees that the port will probably incur as we build the temporary, as we build our facilities out there. And those facilities will kind of go in two phases. There'll be a initial hookup, and then later, as the port cleans up the site, we'll have to move those facilities and then create a permanent facilities at the site. During that process, the port will incur some fees, and the agreement that is proposed will provide that the district will pay some of those fees that are directly related to our facilities and the removal and placement of our facilities. So there's a little bit more cost, but there's not like an annual fee for the easement or something like that.
So you don't really anticipate a lot more costs going forward.
I don't anticipate, no, but there'll be some. And there's, in addition to the amount that Mark has on the slide there, there's about, let's see, I want to say about $16,000 that's included in the purchase agreement that is one of the documents that the commission would be looking at for costs that have been incurred by the port during this negotiation process.
Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
I think I have one question, and I'm not sure. Please remind me of what agencies that we had to receive permits in terms of laying this cable.
I'll make an attempt at it, Commissioner Olson, and I'll have Eric Schneider jump in if I leave any.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we'll need a local permit from Snohomish County, because it's in unincorporated Snohomish County, Head Island is. City of Everett as well, because this is on within the boundaries of City of Everett, Department of Ecology, Army Corps of Engineers, Department of Fish and Wildlife, and it, as a part of those state and federal permit reviews, will also go to the local tribes for review and concurrence.
And that includes the laying of the underground cable. All of those, that's included in that.
Yeah, both the terrestrial portions and the submarine.
So, am I hearing you say we have not begun that process?
Did I leave any permits out?
No, I think.
Okay.
The one other item we would need is an agreement with Department of Natural Resources for where the cable's located.
Yeah, so. Is that something that we're at a point where then we now begin the process?
That's correct. We have applications ready to go. In fact, we have had applications from the older alignment that we shared with the commission several years ago. We've been waiting on securing this agreement to know that we have confidence in the route and we'll make permits in the middle. We're anticipating construction next year with the cable lay operation occurring in January of 2026. So over a year and a half.
Another question. You gave the number of feet. Was this choice in terms of the different options you looked at the longest stretch?
Well, there were longer routes.
Oh, there were. Okay. I'd rather not hear about
it. If you continue along the...
yes or no is all I need.
It was not the longest route.
Yeah. Okay. Everybody's laughing, so they must know a secret. Thank you.
Welcome. Any other questions on this particular slide?
I do.
Okay. This kind of ties into your question, Commissioner Olson, about the permits.
Yeah, I see that.
This project's been underway for a few years now, and as a part of that, in conducting due diligence on behalf of the district, conducted environmental, cultural, and geotechnical studies, used consultants that are experts in those fields for those studies. Also, appraisals were conducted to determine the value of the permanent easement and the temporary construction easement. All reviewed and approved the documents, as well as the Port of Everett legal representatives. So if the commission elects to move forward and approve signing these documents, they'll then go to the Port of Everett for signature after that.
This is a multi-year project.
Yes, it is. Okay. We need, I think Mark said we're expecting to lay the cable in January of 26. Once we get this across the finish line, then we start the studies and get the permits. And yeah, it's wide open throttle.
And just to reiterate, Commissioner Olson, the permanent easement is perpetual and the temporary easement is 18 months.
That's another question I had. It went out of my left ear. Permanent and perpetual are the same thing.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
And just my final point is that you see the very diverse staff that's been working on this project. We're recommending approval of these so we can move forward with the project. And we will be bringing back a resolution on October 7th for your review and the approval.
No more. Thank you. No.
Quick question. So this cable will just lie on the seafloor, right? Mm-hmm. Will it be buried to some extent when it comes ashore to Hat Island? You know, my biggest concern is someone anchoring off Hat Island and snagging it.
Yeah, no, and you're spot on, Commissioner Logan, because with the existing cable, we've had erosion issues. The cable's been exposed. The damage, mechanical damage that was caused to the cable was very near the shoreline on the Hat Island side. In fact, it was in the tidal zone. So with this new project, we'll be installing through a drilling operation, a conduit that will be buried, you know, approximately 50 to 80 feet below the sand at the tidal zone on both ends. And then in the inside of the conduit, the cable will be pulled through. So it won't really be exposed and laying on the submarine floor until it gets several hundred, if not 1,000 feet offshore. Eric could speak to the particulars better.
Wonderful.
But the whole intent there is to not only protect the nearshore environment, but to protect the cable itself.
And a big sign on the beach.
Big sign, cable crossing, yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, appreciate your time.
Excellent, thank you, Mark, thank you, Paul.
You know, I want to take a short break and come back and let's come back at 5 till.
Five, we are back. Awesome. So next up is our discretionary purchased water cost adjustment language. And Christina Arndt. Good morning, Christina.
Good morning, Commissioners. Christina Arndt, manager at the Water Utility. And today we're just coming to you with some language for the discretionary purchased water cost adjustment. We're just here to brief you today around having to change that in our policy and what that language would look like. There's no actual rate adjustment that we're talking about today specifically, and then we'll come back in October to go ahead and approve that. Just a little background for a reminder, City of Everett is approximately 25% of the water utilities O&M costs when we purchase their water. The City of Everett in the last few years since 2018, we've seen a cumulative rate increase of about 29%. Specifically in January, it was an 8% increase to our O&M. And then currently, the City of Everett is looking to move forward with a 12% increase in 2025 and an 8% increase in 2026. Also within the current process, the City of Everett looks for a 4-year rate cycle. They're about to go to that this December. We don't have that approved just yet, but they'll adopt that in December. And then purchase water costs are then incorporated into our annual budget every year. And we do meld those into them, and we do a single overall rate adjustment, which we're looking to go away from. The purpose of this adjustment clause is, we started actually socializing this last year when we came with our overall rate increase, and we did break out how much was impacted by the City of Everett, and then what was our actual general rate increase. But approximately 75% of the water that we deliver to our retail and wholesale customers is purchased from the City of Everett. This adjustment clause would also allow the the commission to adjust rates to reflect those fluctuations in our wholesale costs for purchased water to the water utility. And then it also separates out the adjustment and increases transparency regarding those costs.
So I'm a little confused about this. I mean, I'll be able to learn more as we go through, but I mean, can't we already do number two without doing this? We can adjust the rate at any time.
We're just pulling out
what this is.
We're pulling out the city of Everett because the city of Everett cost increase is effective every January 1st. And we don't actually go for our water retail rate increase until March 1st. So we would be coming to you in the fall with what city of Everett is expecting their rate increase to be as of January 1st in those coming years. And then we wouldn't come back until later when we've finalized and finished presenting the budget to talk to you the water retail rate increase.
So this would be more consistent with what we do the fall, though.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. So we did consider doing an automatic or a discretionary mechanism with this rate increase. We are recommending to do discretionary as it preserves the commission's ability for having a public hearing and going through that process. I mean, it retains your governance role in that process. And again, it ensures transparency. It also allows for us to annually review it and make sure that it makes sense. Over the last 4 years, we've seen on average about 4.5% rate increases from the city of Everett, with again, this last year being 8%. We also saw 8% increase in 2023. And again, we're looking at 12% in 2025 and another 8% in 2026. So this time the proposed cost adjustment clause would read as from time to time, the city of Everett adjusts its wholesale water rates to the district. At the discretion of the commission, the rates charged by the district may be adjusted to reflect the city of Everett rate adjustments, either up or down on the same date that the city of Everett rate changes become effective, or such following date the commission may determine. The adjusted rate will be developed by incorporating the city of Everett cost changes into the water utility's cost of service model and rate design policies adopted by the commission in the most recent rate proceedings. And so at this time, next steps would be coming to you in October to present the resolution that would modify the district's water policies and establish that cost adjustment process, and then implement the cost adjustment process through future commission action as necessary. That's what I have for today.
Questions?
No, I have nothing.
Yeah.
The substantial increases from the city of Everett, is that mostly linked to capital work?
It does have a lot to do with capital work. That's the primary reason that they gave me. Outside of that, they're also seeing cost pressures just like the rest of the communities around. Yeah.
My question was along that line. How do we know that those are appropriate increases on their part? Do we have, obviously, it's not a joint venture, so we can't audit them, but they must have a cost of service analysis.
They do.
And
yep, they do. And they, that's why they're going in December, and over the summer when they communicated with me, they were pretty confident after their rate model and their cost of service analysis that this is where they were going to land.
So I'm not a water customer of UD, so I'm not sure what the bills look like, but do we, if we have a pass-through, do we now or will we let our customers know that we're passing on a portion of, say, a 12% increase from the city of Everett, or how?
Yeah, I imagine we'd do it the same way that we do our rates, and we would have some sort of public announcement. We wouldn't necessarily, there is no notification that goes on the bill per se, but we do publicly announce that when we do rate increases, so we'll likely do it the same.
I mean, all this makes me really want us to secure more source of potable water. So, because these have been going up a lot since I've been on the commission.
Oh, yeah. Everett has had significant rate increases, and just up to this point, it was close to 30%.
Yeah, since 2018.
Yeah, and that's not counting the next couple of years that are significant increases as well. So, which is a really a lot of the driver of why we wanted to separate these out, so there was better transparency for our customers to know, you know, it's
why our rates are increasing, but also this is a big driver. I mean, it's very much like the percentage of power cost is on our electric side. Water is very much the same. So to carve this out and have better transparency, to me, makes sense. And also to separate it so it isn't just, you know, baked in on this normal general rate increase schedule.
Right. So when we have an increase due to Everett, how does that affect the satellite system? Do their rates go up as well?
Yeah, we have one single rate because it takes a lot to go out and actually maintain and operate those satellite systems. So yes, they are impacted by it as well.
Again, I've always wondered if there's a strategy to look at securing water rights by approaching on the water systems or our cost of water from our well in Lake Stevens is so dramatically less than it is for
you have done a lot of work in terms of studying water right issues, and they're pretty
well, I know a little bit about Washington water law and senior rights and junior rights and all that. But regarding the price, I do have one little question. So I don't know if you're privy to information about the rates for other wholesale buyers.
Yes.
Are they comparable? Are they comparable rate increases?
Yeah, usually I do a rate comparison when I come forward to do the overall rate increase. Uh-huh. We have typically landed historically in the bottom quarter of about 30 other utilities in our area.
Well, maybe I didn't make
our rates are typically very, very low.
Well, what I mean is, okay, Everett sells water to not just us, but to other wholesale purchasers. Mm-hmm. So how do their increases compare to our increases within the Everett financial?
I am not sure how they calculate.
So you're not really primitive.
I just know how much approximately 30 other utilities around us where their rates are landing, as well as City of Everett and where ours end up landing.
But aren't they public? Customers?
You're talking about, your question is about the other entities that the City of Everett sells water to.
Right.
Are their rates going up the same percentage?
That's my question.
Yeah, it's an overall wholesale rate increase. Like anyone that they wholesale to, they're all going to see.
It's the same for all of us.
Yes.
Okay. That's.
But they may not choose to pass through as we're proposing.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Christina. Good job. So that is it for our presentations today.
Okay. Well, it is now 10:05 a.m. and our meeting is recessed. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission meeting room at 1:30 p.m. Thank you.